This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday. We take to the streets with Barry Craig, confidential investigator, to start off the show this time. We'll hear his episode from March 9th, 1955, titled Corpse on the Town. After that, it's Nick Carter, Master Detective, and the Flying Duck Murders, his story from October 4th, 1943.
William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Refer to a guy as the ghost of his former self. Look twice at the getup he's wearing. He might be sporting a bedsheet.
The National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with America's number one detective, Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Barry Craig speaking. There's generally a lot more to show business than what people finally get to see from the 480 seat. The backstage, behind-the-scenes shenanigans of what is delicately referred to as the pre-production phases. Brother, can it get wild? Wild and very homicidal. The particular case I have in mind began innocently enough. It commenced up near Yonkers, in a rubble-strewn area that looked like an A-bomb testing grounds in the Nevada flats. The ground floor door I went through read Luther Bassett, Canine Dentistry. Canine Dentistry. Inside, there was a guy in a short white medical coat. A pretty patch of hair on his chin in the style of old Vienna. Luther Bassett, I figured him to be right off. I'd never seen a goatee on a Joan. The dog with him was on the operating table. A while later, in a cubicle off the operating room, Dr. Bassett and I tried to reach an understanding.
I thank you for coming so promptly, Mr. Craig.
Well, you phoned me. You said urgent. You said liberal payments. I liked your language, especially liberal payments. Now, squelch my curiosity first. What do you fill a dog's teeth with? A T-bone steak?
The same as with humans. Amalgam, gold. The one you watched had lower bridge work done.
Lower bridge work, huh?
Oh, that dog is a Broadway star.
Oh.
Fluff. You must surely know him.
Oh, when I go to the dogs, I do it on the east side of town. Never on Broadway. Oh, what play?
The hit comedy Mr. Galooly's Ghost. Fluff plays a big part. Oh, he gets a tremendous salary.
Hmm. High living's ruined his choppers, huh? So, what's the nature of my employment to be, Bassett? Something to do with dogs?
Of the human variety.
In show business?
Yes.
Oh, you're also in show business?
Only as an investor.
Uh-huh. How much? And what theatrical?
I have invested $20,000 in a proposed musical fantasy called 2055.
2055?
The calendar year, 100 years from now.
Oh.
It is a fantasy about the end of the world.
Hmm. Amusing thought. Who's producing it?
Stanton Bishop.
And what's your particular anxiety?
Rumors that I've heard that the show is over-financed.
Is that bad?
Well, perhaps I'm not using the right word.
Wait, I think I know. A man has 100% to sell to investors, but he sells 150%. The show opens, flops, loses its nut, but Stanton Bishop isn't a bit worried. He has a load of sucker money salted away.
If Stanton Bishop is a swindler and not a legitimate producer, I must know. You must investigate for me, discreetly. Do you want a retainer?
Foolish question. Money in front sharpens my talent. I found Stanton Bishop in a rented rehearsal hall on a side street along the main stem. Black Homburg, pink cheeks, yellow teeth, suede shoes. When I found him, he was pulling producer's rank on a lot of long-stem dolls in dancing tights.
Girls, tomorrow I want to see more bounce, more jump. The title of the number is A New World is Born. That means leaps and ecstasy. You've got to prove it to the customer. Dismissed for the day.
I listened while he complimented the baritone.
Mr. Eduardo Bernard, you sang and all I heard was a television commercial for a mouthwash. Before signing as a lead baritone, you should first have your adenoid removed. You're fired from this show.
When Bishop finished throwing his weight around, I tried abusing him.
By what authority do you inquire into my private business affairs?
This badge.
Chicken inspector.
If I were a more sensitive man, that could get you a punch on the nose.
No, I'm a hard case. You punch me and you're a murderer.
The book, please.
Book? What book?
The one you keep for your own information. The record of investors and money. Who and how much. Now, where do you keep it?
Are you? In my safety vault.
Not here in your desk?
Here in my desk? Huh. Why? To accommodate sneaks like you?
That laugh sounded very falsetto to me.
You stay out of my desk. It's personal. It's sacred to me.
Oh, I'll bet. Oh, could this be it?
You give me that ledger.
Hey, wrestle with me, Buster. Okay, if you must be placated. Now, don't oversleep, Buster. I get through this book, my hunch is we'll have things to talk over. Bishop had his swindle written down in his personal ledger so plainly it looked like a confession to the DA. Bishop came too, and we talked it over. Your musical is budgeted to cost $300,000. You've accepted investors' cash totaling over $400,000.
Well, money for contingencies, isn't it?
Baloney. Who is a show angel named Eloise Finchley? She's in for a cool $150,000.
She can afford it.
Oh, I would imagine.
Craig.
What?
Eloise Finchley's investment, it isn't exactly a straight stock deal in the show.
Then what is it?
More of a personal loan to me.
You sure thought that little dodge up fast?
Well, that balances my books, doesn't it? Take away Eloise Finchley's money, and the cash I have so far accepted is less, mind you, than my proposed budget.
I'll believe the personal loan dodge after I've talked to Eloise Finchley. So, what's her phone number?
I don't want you telephoning her, Craig.
How many times a day must you be rocked to sleep?
I'm making a change in that script, if you'll notice, Craig.
Uh-oh. And, where was that gun up till now?
Never mind.
You look more like a hood now than a show producer. More in your natural element.
Don't force me to shoot. Hang up that phone and get out.
Bishop's violent urge to get me out of his office at that moment was nothing impulsive, as I soon found out. It was strategy, plain and simple. Nor did he go far. Just a motor ride to the nearest Gretna Green. Gretna Green being shorthand for any place where marriage could be completed as fast as a couple could chirp, "I do." I read all about it in the morning papers. It was Broadway impresario Stanton Bishop marries socialite Eloise Finchley in surprise elopement. At my first opportunity, I paid my respects to the bride in a fancy bridal suite almost as close to Central Park as the statue of Sherman's horse.
Champagne, Mr. Craig?
Conversation, Mrs. Bishop.
You disapprove of my marriage?
Your mister will never get through the pearly gates.
Oh, is there a man without vices, really, Mr. Craig?
How come you eloped with Bishop immediately with my investigation of him?
How come? Now, let me see. Yes. He invited me on a motor ride. It was perfect weather. The moon, Mr. Craig, you've never seen such a gorgeous moon.
And that was it?
Love doesn't stop to reason, Mr. Craig.
I've heard. Bishop married you as a cover-up for his larceny. The marriage takes you off his books as an outside investor and puts it in the family. It, balances his books.
Must we really be so dull, Mr. Craig, so prosaic? I'm a bride. I'm in heavenly raptures.
Yeah? You're heading for one big hangover.
I adore champagne.
I'll leave sounding one last dull and prosaic note.
Must you?
The sudden elopement smacks of conspiracy. Conspiracy to frustrate an investigation of Bishop's peculiar theatrical financing. Sweet matrimony was only a device for whitewashing him. How about that?
You don't really expect me to testify against my husband, Mr. Craig.
Okay. I know when I'm licked.
And you forget. $150,000 of the total on Stanton's books was my own money anyhow. My own money, Mr. Craig.
Yeah. And frankly, that angle of it has me befuddled, perplexed, confused, and mystified. I reported back to my client, the canine dentist, Luther Bassett. Well, Who's the dental patient now, Bassett? Another famous dog actor?
Oh, yes. This is Rinky Tintin.
Rinky Tintin?
Reputed to be a grandnephew of Ren Tintin.
Bow wow. Genuine aristocracy. And what show is Rinky in?
The World and the Egg. It's a play about reincarnation.
What does Rinky play in it?
Napoleon. The dog is the 20th century reincarnation of Napoleon.
Mm.
Mind you, it is an allegorical play.
Yes, I get you. Mm. Well, you can leave your $20,000 with Bishop or not, as you please.
You mean the operation is legitimate?
Now it is. I think I scared him into legitimate producing. I mean, if Bishop actually has the show business know-how for producing musicals.
But he was first contemplating a swindle?
With every breath in his body.
Then I will withdraw my investment.
Well, you won't get all of it. Not at this date. Bishop has had some pre-production costs already. But salvage what you can. Go ahead. Well, my cost to you is $300. Pay me off, Bassett. End of case. Only it wasn't. It was just the beginning, as it turned out. The blissfully newlywed Stanton Bishops were doomed to make more headlines. Gruesome ones this time. I saw it first on a street newsstand. Mrs. Stanton Bishop. I could only see that much. Hey, give me that paper, boy. The whole headline read, Mrs. Stanton Bishop killed in street mugging. It had sure been a short honeymoon. I let official sources amplify the newspaper details for me. In this case, a first-grade detective in homicide named Scotty.
What's your interest in the late Mrs. Stanton Bishop, Craig?
I mourn her passing. How did she go?
A street assault.
And what was taken?
So far as we know, her purse, the diamond wristwatch, and her wedding ring.
According to whom?
Stanton Bishop, when he identified the body.
Mm-hmm. Well, what police results so far?
None.
No clue to the alleged mugger?
You hit the word alleged. Why?
Because, frankly, I'm skeptical.
Your reason?
Nothing concrete, so I won't give it yet. What was the cause of death? Strangulation?
A broken neck. She'd been hit with the side of the palm, a rabbit punch. It's a favorite blow with mugger.
Or a killer trying to make it look like a standard mugging. Now, where did it happen?
54th and 9th. We found the victim in an areaway.
Hard to believe.
What is?
A lady of her style being at 54th and 9th to begin with. Eloise Finchley Bishop was Park Avenue, very perfumed, very upper class.
Not always.
Well, what would that mean?
Our check into her pedigree turned up some interesting facts. She was posing as a socialite, and her maiden name, Finchley, was an assumed one.
Then who was she, really?
Eloise Berkey. Father was a railroad brakeman. Parents now both dead. Eloise herself was a dress model when she worked. Not that there's any law against posing as society, folks.
No, there isn't, only one thing really has me confused now.
Yeah, what's that, Craig?
Well, where would a sometimes dress model get $150,000 for a theatrical investment? I was around the rehearsal hall to give my condolences to Stanton Bishop personally. He looked a little different to me this visit. The pink cheeks were sallow, deep lines in his face, like he'd had some new worries added.
What do you want here, Craig?
What was Mrs. Stanton doing on the wrong side of town?
How should I know?
Or what was stolen from her?
I've already told the police.
Tell me.
Her pocketbook, a diamond wristwatch, and her wedding ring. Craig, you're not going to maliciously persecute me.
Shouldn't I?
Well, I'm in mourning. I experienced a horrible tragedy. I think of how Eloise died. I have nightmares. I'm in a cold sweat.
Sad. What's happened to our $150,000?
Craig, please, not at a time like this.
Tough to answer, huh?
Look, I'm straight, clean as a new baby. Maybe I had ideas once, wrong ideas, but all right, you cured me. Now, let me live.
That depends on how your wife really died.
She was attacked. She was robbed. Her neck was broken by some homicidal maniac.
Or that's how it was made to appear.
Then you are going to persecute me maliciously.
At least until you explain to me how an ex-dress model was able to invest a fortune in your show. Also, What really was the attraction that got you two married?
Heckle me or embarrass me with the police and the public. You'll only make trouble for yourself.
Did you murder your wife and fob it off as a mugging by a person or persons unknown?
No. I tell you no. I tell you no.
I did a further check into the background of the corpse with the grudging connivance of first grade Detective Scotty.
Hey, Craig, I can get reprimanded for this.
Or promoted.
Yeah, promoted for letting you into an apartment officially sealed to the public.
Now, look, I saw this. I quietly turn the information over to you. I don't take a bow. You get a promotion and a raise.
Boy, are you good at dangling sucker bait.
Well, Eloise Berkey, Ellis Finchley, ex-dress model. Where did she ever get $150,000? Well, squat somewhere, Scotty, while I look around. I came up with a ton of stuff, hidden away in bureau drawers, driven packages, and a steamer trunk. The personal stuff nobody ever throws away. Old letters, diaries, a high school pin, and picture albums. Lots of picture albums. The recent Eloise had collected the history of her life in snapshots.
Yeah, she's in it from the first baby pose on a bear rug right to maidenhood.
Yeah, Eloise in pigtails, in her school graduation dress. How she looked at Sweet 16 on her first date, as a slim chick in a one-piece bathing suit. How she looked as a dress model.
Hey, hold it, Craig.
Well, what strikes you?
That page of snapshots, the two shots. Eloise posed with a guy. Six pictures, the same guy.
Well, what about it?
Well, study the face of the guy. Now, you recognize him?
Yeah, I've seen him. Why, sure, he's famous.
Notorious, he's Artie Anzac.
Big gun Artie Anzac.
Big gun used to be. Oh, he's responsible now. Retired from the rackets, he's had it. Served 20 years in Leavenworth for tax evasion.
This page of pictures, Anzac and Eloise, they look like very recent photographs.
Watch out with Anzac, Craig. He's still king to a big piece of gangland.
I'll be most respectful. I've got a thing about royalty. Anzac lived like royalty should. A heavily wooded estate on the outskirts of the city, with a high stone wall around it like the side of a mountain. I found him practicing golfing putts on a library rug. I talked while Anzac concentrated on his stance. When he'd figured out his answers, he gave them to me.
Sure I know Eloise. Sweet kid.
Sweet dead kid?
Yeah. Ain't it a shame? Out walking and that's it. Still, everybody dies. Some just go sooner.
What was she to you, Anzac?
A babe. I bought her a coat, I bought her one of them foreign cars, and then I moved on to another babe.
Period.
Period. I'm not poor. Spread the wealth, I figure.
Did it bother you when Eloise married Stanton Bishop?
No, not a bit. I'm for marriage. My mother was married. I even sent them a wire of congratulations with a load of flowers that cost me a C note. Craig, I already had another babe.
Yeah, you said.
Now I'd like to get back to my putting, huh? I'm in a tournament tomorrow.
But I'm not through talking.
What else is it?
Well, I'm at the point now of mentioning $150,000.
Not a dough.
Eloise invested that much in Bishop's musical production.
Now, where would a babe get that kind of cabbage?
I think from you.
Hey, I'm not that generous.
I think Eloise invested it for you. Idle money, hot money, undeclared income. She was your front, so tax officials wouldn't be the wiser. You'd already served time for tax evasion. You'd had enough of that.
Hey, that's quite an idea you got.
Oh, I'm loaded with ideas. I also think Eloise double-crossed you, that she invested the money for herself, and that Bishop knew the source of the money and what Eloise was up to, and that Bishop used that knowledge as a weapon to make Eloise marry him.
Now, why would he do that?
Oh, he had to make Eloise marry him. I'd been investigating Bishop. I'd found irregularities enough for me to alert the district attorney. Bishop had to find a device for shutting me off.
I got practicing to do, Craig. I'm in a tournament tomorrow.
I think you murdered Eloise to pay her off for the double cross. And as an object lesson for Bishop. So Bishop will respect your $150,000 piece of his musical production. I think you're the killer, Anzac.
Watch this putt. Huh. Beautiful, huh?
I left Anzac to drive home. Anzac's wanted a state to join the famous state park, popular with campers, hikers, and hunters. Signs on roadside trees advertised the 2-week open hunting season. Deer was the big game. I almost qualified. A rifle shot through my side window that almost skinned my scalp. A wild shot, I wondered. Or was it a devoted Anzac subject trying to please the king? It was one of the things in life I'd never know. A chain is no stronger than its weakest link. Stanton Bishop figured to be the weak link. An easy mark for a trick designed to get corroborating evidence against a suspected killer. I found him alone in the rehearsal hall, chewing on a dead cigar.
Craig, you've soured my whole life.
Oh, sad. I wonder how nervous you'll be, Bishop, strapped in the electric chair.
Strapped? Me, Craig? For what?
The murder of your wife. I've got evidence against you.
Evidence?
Those articles supposedly stolen from Eloise.
So?
So I've got them locked up in my office safe.
Where could you get them?
Right out of your wife's bureau.
It's a trick. You're lying to me. You're trying to trap me in something.
But you can't be sure, huh? You ad-libbed a story of stolen articles to make the alleged mugging plausible. Why were you so anxious to have it written off as an unsolved mugging? Who are you afraid of? Now, you clam up, you'll only be a fall guy, Bishop. Who's the somebody else, Bishop? Come on, it's trembling on your lips.
Anzac. Artie Anzac. He murdered Eloise, and I'll tell you why.
Oh, don't bother to. I already know why. Now, the guy answering this phone will be Scotty of Homicide. Tell your story to him. From here on, it's his case. Hello, Scotty. This is Barry Craig. Scotty, I've got a guy here who's going to mean your raise and promotion. Yes, sir. A Craig promise is always redeemable in cash.
You have been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, Corpse on the Town, was written by John Robert. Next week, it's the strange story of The Golden Touch, about which Barry Craig has this to say. In The Golden Touch, a doll with amnesia forgets everything but her alibi when her partner in unholy matrimony takes a second fatal leap out of her arms and into eternity. The National Broadcasting Company has just brought you an NBC Radio Network production with William Gargan starring as Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Directed by Andrew C. Love, the cast included Harley Bear, Frank Gerstle, Vivi Janis, and Joe Forte.
It's another case for that most famous of all manhunters, the detective whose ability at solving crime is unequaled in the history of detective fiction, Nick Carter, Master Detective. Tonight's curious adventure,
The Flying Duck Murders, for Nick Carter and the Gold Thieves.
Carter and Lee unless you think more of a large, fat fee than you do of your life, I advise you to throw up the case at once.
Apparently, we don't look at this in the same light, Mr. Dalrymple. I expect danger, and I'm prepared to meet it.
I suppose you know that two other detectives have come out to this wild Montana country where the Flying Duck mine is located, trying to find the trouble. But do you know that neither of them live to tell what they found?
How were they killed, Mr. Dalrymple?
They went crazy, Miss Bowen. Kessler, the San Francisco man, fell over a cliff, while Riley, the man from Chicago, dropped 600 feet down the main shaft of the mine.
Very interesting.
I feel quite sure that Nick won't share their fate.
May I inquire for whom you're acting, Mr. Carter?
You may. For Mr. Cecil Trenwick, an old friend of my father's and a large shareholder in the Flying Duck Mine. He said that you'd cooperate with me in every possible way.
I shall do what I can, certainly.
Good. I should like you to give me a letter to the superintendent of the mine, telling him that I'm a good workman and that you promised me a job. I shall disguise myself as a miner, using the name Dave Jarvis.
Very well. You said your name will be Dave Jarvis?
Right.
That'll do what you want. Give it to Mr. Nate Crosby, the mine super. He happens to be here in town this morning. Unless you change your mind and decide to return to New York.
Thank you, Mr. Dalrymple. But I'm staying here till my work is finished. Good morning.
Goodbye.
Good morning.
Wait a minute, Patsy. I wonder if Mr. Dalrymple is...
431, operator.
Yeah.
Yes. Hello? I want to speak to Nate Crosby. Okay, I'll wait.
Crosby? He's the mine super, Nate.
Yes, things are beginning to move already.
Yes.
If I open this door a crack, we'll hear better.
Nate, this is Dalrymple. Frenick has done what he's been threatening to do for so long. He sent Nick Carter out here to investigate. Yes, Nick Carter. The one man in the world I'm afraid of. They've got to market the stuff right away. We can't wait any longer now. Give him the job he wants and then take care of him. Yes, if you don't, it may mean curtains for all of us. Right, so long. And that will settle your future, Mr. Nick Carter.
I very much doubt that, Mr. Dalrymple.
Thanks for the attention, Mr. Dalrymple. But I intend to take care of my own future.
So, Mr. Dalrymple is in on the deal.
He certainly is, Gubby, up to his neck.
Well, at least we start off with one good hot prospect. What do we do now?
Get into your miner's office. Then take this note down to this address and give it to Nate Crosby, the mine super. Now remember, your name's Dave Jarvis, and Crosby's to give you a job in the mill.
Okay, Nick. Then what?
Well, first and foremost, keep your eyes open. Crosby will believe you're Nick Carter. So watch out for him. He'll try to put you out of the way.
And don't forget, Scubby, the detectives from Chicago and Frisco both came to grief.
Well, it's going to be different with the guy from New York.
Now, Patsy, you wait here at the hotel where we can get in touch with you if we need you.
Sure, Nick.
All right, get going, Scubby. I'm going out to the mine right away. You wait, though, and ride out with Crosby. And watch out for him.
Right, Nick. I'll keep one eye on him and one on the mine.
Thanks for the lift, bud.
That's okay, pal. That's the super's office right there.
Thanks. I'll be seeing you.
You looking for someone?
You're the super of the Flying Duck Mine?
No, I'm the assistant super. Clem Hendricks is the name.
Well, my name's King. I'm writing up an article about the mines of Montana for the Miners' Times of Kansas City. Any objection to me sticking around a while, looking things over?
None at all, Mr. King. Just so long as you say something good about us in your article. You want me to show you around?
No, thanks. I'll just drift around and see what I can pick up.
If anyone stops here, tell them I said it was okay.
Thanks, I will. Be seeing you. Now, find the boss of the day shift and get some information on how this place operates.
These are the mill stamping machines, Mr. King. They crush the ore very fine, and it is then sluiced through the battery boxes and carried over to plates.
I see.
The plates are coated with quicksilver or mercury, and the quicksilver picks up most of the gold and from the crushed ore. And this combination of quicksilver and gold we call amalgam.
And you scrape this amalgam off the plates and take it to the refinery?
Yes, Mr. King. The refinery separates the gold from the quicksilver and casts it into bars.
Very interesting. Well, thanks very much. I'll roam along and look the rest of the place over. See you later.
That's where you belong, you old hag. Down there with your flat, your face in the dirt.
You strike, you surrender.
You bagged, you old Indian witch, and I'm going to finish the job right.
Put down that knife.
I'll drop it between your ribs.
Never mind, drop that knife, I said.
You're the fool. Knock me down, will you? I'll show you.
Hey, Ledyard, put up that gun.
But Nate, this fella.
Put up the gun, I said. What are you trying to do?
Well, I was trying to make Zalander behave. This fella interfered. It made me mad.
Zalander, where is she?
She's right. Well, I'll be darned. She must have run away while me and him was arguing.
So you interfered, did you, mister?
Certainly I did.
You're King, the newspaper man, aren't you?
That's right.
Looking for you. I'm Crosby, mine superintendent. I'll give you just 15 minutes to get out of this camp.
So you're Nate Crosby.
I am, and I'm the boss here. And I say, get out.
All right, Crosby. I'll get out. But I'll be back. I never leave a job unfinished.
All right, pick them up. You can carry them. I know they're heavy, but they have to have a solid lead lining so we can ship bodies in them. Put them in the old powder house and shut the door when you're through.
Okay, boss. Come on, fellas.
Okay.
All right, get it up there. That's the stuff. Oh, boy, they're heavy.
That does it.
Okay.
Now we're going to have to move some of these empty powder kegs to make room for all three caskets. Jarvis, you stay here and pile them up out of the way. Rest of you get the other caskets.
Okay, boss.
All right, hop to it.
Hey, Scubby. Chubby, is that you, Nick? Where are you?
Behind these cakes. Start piling them up. You can talk while you work.
Oh, sure, Nick. What happened, Nick?
Why are you hiding in here? Crosby ordered me to get out of camp immediately, but the assistant super suggested I hide here until he get me a ride back to town. Seems he doesn't like Crosby any better than I do. What with you?
Well, I got a job as crusher man on the night shift at the mill.
What are these boxes you're bringing in here?
Caskets. Crosby told the teamster the bodies of the two detectives who got killed were to be taken up and shipped to their friend.
Right. Come the men with another box.
Get it in.
All right. Well,
get it in. Yeah. Okay.
Nick, there were only two detectives who were killed. Who do you suppose the third box is for?
For you, I imagine, Scubby.
What?
Remember, they think you're Nick Carter. I'm only Mr. King, newspaper reporter.
Well, I'll certainly see that casket stays empty.
Stubby, you know where the detectives are buried?
Well, the teamster told me that Crosby knows because he and a couple of the millhands took the bodies away.
I see.
Scubby, I've got an idea. When the men bring in the other casket, you go out with them. Then make some excuse to come back in here again.
Okay, Nick, I'll fix it.
Quiet now.
All right, fellas, right here. That's it.
All right,
that'll do it, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, boss.
What?
I must have dropped my knife inside the
powder
house. Mind if I get it?
Do what you want, so long as you're not late for your shift at the mill.
Okay, boss, I'll be there.
Oh, Kurt, Nick, they've gone. Now, what's your idea?
First, shut the door, Scubby.
Oh, sure, Nick.
Now, Scubby, I want to see what's in these caskets. Here, I've got a screwdriver and my knife.
Oh, so have I. Look, I'll help you.
Good. Well, I'm glad they only used four screws to fasten these covers down. Makes it simpler.
But why do you want to see what's inside, Nick?
Got a hunch, that's all.
Yeah.
There, it's got it.
You all ready?
Yeah. All right, let's lift her up. Give me a hand.
Yeah.
Right. There. My hunch is right, Scubby. The caskets are not lead-lined. The extra weight is due to this scrap iron in the bottom.
Like Crosby said, they had to have lead lining so they could be shipped with the bodies in them.
These caskets figure in this game more than just as caskets, Scubby.
Well, Crosby told the teamster to have a fresh team hitched to the large wagon for him at midnight tonight.
I thought so. Scubby, he's going to take these caskets somewhere tonight. And I want to know where.
Yeah, but how are you going to find out?
I'm going with him. Hidden in this casket. I'll get in it and you put the lead back on.
Oh, but Nick, you'll smother in there with the lid down.
Well, Gubby, you can put four small pieces of wood under the coffin lid before you screw it down.
Oh, but Nick, I wish you would...
Don't try to argue now. Hurry up.
All right. That's
a pretty good fit. All right. Now hurry up.
Okay, Nick. Keep your head down while I put the lid on.
Okay. There we are. Have you learned anything yet, Gubby?
Well, the only place in the mill where the gold could be stolen is the room where the battery boxes and the plates are.
Have you found out how they did it?
No, not yet. I hope to learn tonight when I'm on duty in the mill.
Good, Gubby. You take care of that end. Now, what's this end?
Yeah.
Well, here's good luck to us both. I suspect we both may need it.
How's the great Nick Carter doing tonight, Ledger?
You mean Mr. Dave Jarvis?
Yeah.
He's doing swell. Look at him. He's taking another drink. He's been hitting the water bucket steady for the last half hour.
Is the loco working?
I'll say. The bees are in his bonnet already. A famous Nick Carter will go the way the other two did.
Hey, what are you fellas doing dancing around like that? You can't fool me. There are a lot of billy goats. Oh, I'm thirsty. I gotta get me a drink.
Keep your eye on him. If he starts fighting, lay him out with a crowbar. Hey, don't take any chances.
Okay.
Did you see that? He's heading for the cliffs, just like the others. The Lander's mixture hasn't failed yet.
What's next, Crosby?
Ledyard, get my team from the stable at midnight tonight and meet me at the old powder house. Now we can put Nick Carter's name on the third casket.
I know that voice. That's Courtney. I'd like to see his face if he knew I was in this traffic.
What did you take such wild broncos for, Super?
They're the only fresh team in the stable. We got a hard run tonight over rough country where no truck could possibly go. All right, Sam. Let them go and then climb up here with me.
Here they go. Watch them. Okay.
Ouch. Oh. Wish they picked a better road to drive on.
Now that the loco is done for Carter, we can bring this business to a successful finish.
Oh, William. Oh. I hope we're not going far at this rate.
You mean we're going to quit?
We sure are. We'll market the stuff and make a clean getaway.
This is the roughest ride I've ever had.
Hey, you're going to market the stuff.
Leave that to me. I'll see that each of you gets it.
Stop them, boss! Stop them! Hold them in!
Oh, they're running away. One of the reins is broken.
Running away? I didn't count on this.
They're going to smash! Jump for your lives!
We got off just in time, boy.
Yeah. Hey, look at that casket, Crosby. The one with the lid torn off.
Huh? Oh, that's the infernal reporter I ordered to get out of camp this afternoon.
What was he doing in that casket?
Never mind that now. Get him while he's only half conscious.
Come on, Sam. Now you...
Good work, boys. That fixes Mr. Reporter. Tie hands and feet with that rope.
Okay, boy. You won't fight no more for a while now.
Hey, look, Super. Here's a pair of handcuffs in his pocket and a couple of guns.
Hey, what kind of reporter are you? Going around with handcuffs and guns in your pocket.
You'll have to draw your own conclusions, Crosby.
I've drawn them already. You're here to help Nick Carter. But by this time, Carter's where neither you nor anyone else is going to help him. He's loco. Plum loco.
Well, you never can be sure about Carter, Crosby.
I can this time. Then I can be sure of you, too. All right, put him back in the casket, boys. Put the cover on. Nail it down if you can't find the screws. Here's some nails.
Come on, you. In you go.
I got out the last time I was in here, Crosby.
But you won't get out this time. Get the lid on, boys.
That does it.
That's swell. That's enough. He can't do anything with his hands tied. Lydiard, you and Sam get the shovels that were in the wagon and dig a nice deep hole. We'll bury our reporter friend with our blessing.
Now, you see, you hear, you know what he says.
Yeah, I know.
Good. You eat better now.
Hey, who are you?
Me, Zolander. You saved Zolander life. Zolander, your friend. Drink this. You feel eat better. Quick.
Thanks. Now, hey, tell me, how did I get here?
Just before sun come up, they chase crazy man through woods. Then me hear gun shoot. See you run. You come, fall down by Zolander, hurt in head. So, Zolander hurt.
Well, certainly glad you were around when I passed out.
Crosby, you enemy?
Certainly is now. You say you were chasing a crazy man?
Him drink loco, like two other men come before.
I wonder if that could have been Scubby. Crosby said he was loco. Zolander, what did you want to find him for?
Me want save him life. Give medicine. Make him well.
But what did you want to save him?
Crosby, give him loco, this man. Zolander, eat Crosby. Want save man. Crosby, want kill.
Zolander, listen. I think this crazy... No, Scubby! No, put down that knife, Scubby! No, Scubby, no! Give me that knife! Get it to me!
No, no!
I hate to do this to you, but it's the quickest way, so...
No!
Quick, Zolander. Get me some rope. I'll tie his hands and feet while he's unconscious. Ah, poor Scubby. Looks as if he'd been through the war.
Oh, your rope, you're tired.
Thanks. Now.
Think of medicine. Make him all better from local.
There, Scubby. That should hold you now.
Here's the medicine. Make him well. There. You come drink.
Thanks. All right, Scubby, old boy. Come on, I'll drink
gold.
It. Come on, drink it.
Oh.
Come on.
Oh, the elbows and blood.
Come on, come on. There you are. Now,
him sleep little while. Be all right when him wake up.
Poor guy. I'll untie your arms anyway. Take this coat off you, and you'll be more comfortable.
Hey,
what's this? One coil of wire with a lot of metal discs attached. What? That's the answer. Of course. The mystery of the Flying Duck Mine is a mystery no longer. Well, Scubby, feeling better now that you've had some sleep?
Yeah, I feel pretty good. Why?
You don't remember what happened to you yesterday morning?
Well, the last thing I recall is going to the water bucket and taking a long drink. Seemed as if the more I drank, the more I wanted.
Well, that water bucket was loaded with loco weed juice.
What?
Surprised you didn't notice it.
Oh, I'm surprised at myself now. But both the amalgamators, even Crosby himself, kept drinking. While pretending to from that same bucket. Well, they certainly had me fooled.
Look, Scubby. You remember seeing these discs strung on this coil of wire?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I recall seeing one of the amalgamators have it last night. Why, did I bring it here?
You did. And it breaks the case wide open.
Well, good for me, even if I didn't know it. Hey, tell me, Nick, what are those discs used for?
Here, I'll show you.
Yeah.
Now watch. Now you see? This stuff I'm scraping off is amalgam. A mixture of quicksilver and gold. The men who worked in the battery boxes in the mill, the amalgamators, hung these discs and a lot more like them in the battery boxes right where they'd catch the best of the gold before it flowed over the other plate. They took out over half the gold that flowed into the boxes this way.
So that's where all those thousands of dollars worth of gold disappeared to.
Yes, Scubby. A very clever method of stealing the gold. Now, if we could only find out what Crosby and his gang do with the amalgam after they scrape it off their discs.
Hmm. You want to catch Crosby?
Well, I'll say we do if we can.
Hey, Nick, who is she?
Oh, that's Zolanda. She saved my life. Oh, and yours too, incidentally.
Saved my life? How?
Well, that local weed juice you drank is fatal. Well, Zolanda gave you a nice antidote for it.
Oh, gosh, thanks, Zolanda. Gee, I'm sure much obliged.
Crosby tried kill me. Me is the same. Zolanda knew all about Crosby. You come with me.
Well, where are you taking us?
Crosby got cave inside mountain where he hide stuff. Come, me show you.
This is where Crosby hides out, huh?
Yeah. Too bad there's no one here now.
But they've been here today. Look there, Scubby.
Well, that looks like the scrap iron we took out of the casket in the old powder house before you hid in it.
Right, Scubby. And this scrap iron was in the other two caskets.
So they brought them up here. I wonder why.
There's the answer. Over there in that corner. And the Thayer's furnace.
And it's still warm, Scubby. Now we must have scared them off when we came up.
Wait. Let me take the cover off this retort.
There. Nick. Is that gold in there?
That's just what it is. Part of the gold stolen from the mine. This is where the gang refined the amalgam they scraped off their discs. Much easier to handle gold this way because it weighs so much less. Now, since we know from what Dalrymple said that they never disposed of any of the stolen gold, they must have 800 or 900 pounds of it by now.
Hey, maybe they've got it hidden around here somewhere.
They did have, Scubby. But not now.
Well, what makes you think so, Nick?
Here. Take a look outside there. They've been digging there very recently.
Oh, but of course, Nick. They had to dig up the bodies of the two detectives to ship them back home.
No, Scubby. The way it looks to me is this. After I got away from them last night, Crosby and his men took up the casket they tried to bury me in and
tried to bury you in? Hey, you didn't tell me about
that. Ask about it later, Scubby. Right now, I'm interested in what happened here. They brought the three caskets up here early this morning. Loaded them up.
How could they load three of them? They only had two bodies.
No, Scubby. Three caskets were loaded up. Don't you understand yet?
No, Nick, I'm afraid I don't. How could they be
Scubby,
loading...
How good are you at riding a horse?
Riding a horse?
Yeah.
Well, I used to ride years ago. Why?
Good. Zolanda, can you get us a couple of good fast horses right away?
For you, me, get two good horses quick.
Good. Come on, Scubby. Let's get the horses and ride to the railroad station before the eastbound train gets in.
But, Nick, what's all the hurry?
Well, unless I'm wrong, Scubby, these three caskets are going east on the next train. We've got to get there in time to stop them.
Oh, even Crosby himself would recognize us, these Indian costumes, the land will let us.
Well, we may need to be disguised before we get through.
Hey, you didn't finish telling me how you got away from Crosby and his gang when they started to bury you alive. What did happen, Nick?
Well, they dug the hole, and they put the casket down in it. I tried to pry the lid loose, but my hands were tied behind me. I worked on them, and just as they started throwing the dirt back on top of the casket, I finally got my hands free and untied my feet. Just then, I heard shooting and some female screaming.
A female? Out there in the wild?
Yeah, it was Zolanda, I found out later. Well, I managed to loosen the cover and push it up enough to see that Crosby and the men were watching something across the clearing. So I seized my chance and climbed carefully out of the hole on the opposite side. I started to run, but they saw me and started shooting. Fortunately, though, they were bad shots, and I was almost free when a bullet grazed my head. It must have stunned me, because I remember nothing more till I woke up in Zolanda's hut this morning.
Well, do you know what it was that distracted the men's attention?
Well, Zolanda told me that you were chasing her, trying to shoot her. She was screaming. You chased her around the other side of the clearing and then went off after something else. It was just about then that you saw me running toward her. When Crosby saw me drop, he gave up the chase. Zolanda waited until they went back and then dragged me to her hut.
Gosh, Nick, we owe a lot to Zolanda.
Right, Scubby. And the best way we can pay that debt is to see that Crosby and his murdering pals end up where they belong, behind bars or in the electric chair.
You understand, Patsy?
Of course, Nick. You want the police chief to meet you at the station in 10 minutes. And you want Mr. Dalrymple and the president and treasurer of the mine to meet you in the chief's office in an hour.
That's right. Now be sure you get them all.
Don't worry, I'll take care of it.
These are the ones, Nick. These three here on the baggage truck.
Did you notice the names on them, Scubby?
Yeah. Joe Briley, Phil Kessler. Oh, look, Nick Carter.
I'd rather be out here dressed as an Indian than in there dressed as a corpse.
One side, there, rain in the face. We got to get these caskets into the baggage car.
Oh, just a minute. You see this badge? Special agent.
So what? What do you want me to do?
Just leave these caskets in the baggage truck for now.
But they're supposed to go on this...
Staying here, quiet.
Hey, look here, baggage master. Get these boxes on the train and be quick about it.
No be in hurry, mister.
Why, you Indian meddler, what the deuce do you...
You look behind you.
What do you mean?
Take your hat off, Scubby.
Sure, Nick. There you are, Mr. Crosby.
Dave Jarvis. Why, you...
I'll try to start anything, Crosby. I've got my gun on
you. Hey, where are you getting these boxes off?
Hurry, your man, officer. These three right here.
Get your hands up, all of you, and fast.
Hey, what the you devil you...
Quiet.
What is it?
Quiet, all of you. You three men are under arrest. Charged with robbing the Flying Duck mine and with the murder of Detectives Riley and Kessler.
Now, Mr. Dalrymple, I asked you and the officials of the Flying Duck Mine to meet me here in the office of the Chief of Police because I want to show you what's in the casket that Crosby was taking back east with him. Now, the first casket is supposed to contain the body of Phil Kessler. All right, Scubby, open it.
Sure, Nick.
Gold. Gold bullion.
Yes, Chief. In these three caskets, you'll find the entire amount of gold stolen from the mine. Stolen by Dalrymple, the mine manager, Crosby, the mine super, and four of the workmen who worked in the amalgam room of the mill. They stole the amalgam, refined it in their own furnace, and buried it in two holes in the ground, which was supposed to be the graves of the two dead detectives.
Mr. Carter, that much gold would make the caskets pretty heavy. Wouldn't that extra weight be noticed?
No, Chief. Because when you ship a body by train, the casket has to be lead-lined and hermetically sealed. That means it weighs much more than the usual casket. Crosby, Ledyard, and Perkins were each going to take one of the caskets east with them as a personal baggage, which would prevent anybody from examining them too closely. One of the cleverest schemes I've seen in a long time.
But it wasn't clever enough, not with Nick on the job. You have to get up early in the morning to beat Nick.
This was another strange experience of Nick Carter, Master Detective, called The Flying Duck Murders, or Nick Carter and the Gold Thieves.
That's Case Closed for this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with another hour of crime stories. Between now and then, you can find past episodes of this show at relicradio.com. Alongside links to all the other podcasts, our Shoutcast stream, and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Thank you, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.